Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Talking with Heroes talk show program. I am Bob Calvert, the founder of Talking with Heroes. We're 1 month away from 10 years on the air between audio and video programs. And for those of you that are listening for the very first time, you can find out about our almost 10-year history by going to talkingwithheroes.com/about. Also, our news site will kind of let you know what we've been doing the last 6-8 months and what's coming up. And that is thankyouforyourservice.us. We have a regular weekly program on Thursday evenings with members of the r4alliance.org, fast-growing organization of now well over 60 military support group nonprofits who are all involved in one way or another in recreational therapy. There's some amazing studies that are going to be released early next year that's going to help a lot of military families and veteran families across the country see they have another option here to help them a little bit. But also, for the past, I guess, about 7 months now, we have been hosting another program with soldiers from the Schofield Barracks with 3rd Brigade Combat Team, 25th Infantry Division, the Bronco Brigade. And these programs are going to continue, I guess, to the end of the year. We've got a date scheduled here. And if you've missed any of these programs with these amazing soldiers that we've been talking to on the air here, go to our news site, thankyouforyourservice.us. There's an article on the left column that says, listen to 3BCT, 25 ID soldiers, call in from Schofield Barracks, Australia, and more. And you'll hear all the programs we've done so far, and by each program, there's a link where you can just start listening anytime, 24/7. On this program today, we're going to be talking with Staff Sergeant Michael J. McKenzie. He is a Purple Heart recipient. He's going to talk a little bit about his service. He's going to talk about being injured in a firefight in Afghanistan. And also, I understand they had a really neat ceremony for him just a few days ago where he received a helmet back to him, and you'll understand when he shares about this. And so he's the program executive officer with the 2nd 27th Infantry Battalion, 3rd Brigade Combat Team, 25th Infantry Division at Schofield Barracks. So I'd like to thank you for your service, Staff Sergeant McKenzie, and I'll welcome you to the program.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
Good. How you doing?
Good, good. It's kind of hot out here today.
Oh, is it really? What's the temperature out there in Schofield Barracks?
Oh, man. For some reason, when you get on Schofield, it's like 100 degrees, it feels like.
Really? Wow. That's pretty far up there.
Yeah.
Well, again, I want to welcome you to the program. And if you don't mind, kind of start out, just share with our listeners a little bit about maybe why you joined the Army, you know, what caused you to decide to join, and
okay.
Also when.
Okay, yeah. I joined, it was late 2005 going into 2006. Joined mainly for same reasons most younger guys do. I was about 20 years old, kind of, you know, running wild, needing some type of structure, stability in my life. I wasn't really thinking about going to college or anything. And so I went to a couple recruiters. At first, I was thinking about joining the Marine Corps, but a couple of my buddies already went, and then they kept, when they told me about it, I was like, I don't know if I want to try that. Like, I don't know if I was just ready for that type of commitment or whatever was going on. So waited a little bit longer, and then I ended up joining the Army. And went to basic training at Fort Benning, OSIT, which is you do basically all that means is you do all your training there. And, from there I got stationed in Korea my first year, which really didn't do too much there. I mean, just mainly training. I got my expert infantryman badge there. And from there I got orders to Fort Campbell, and that's when I feel like my military career really picked up. Went to Iraq in 2007 and in 2009 to Samarra, Iraq. I was at a patrol base, Olsen, and then came back, was back for almost a year, and then that's when I went to Afghanistan, which I was in Kunar River Valley, and basically from there, came back, went to TRADOC for a little bit at Fort Sill, Oklahoma. I still don't know how I came up on orders to that place. Worked at Rappel Tower and a couple other like places around there. Basically ran stuff for basic training companies. It was a pretty chill job, you know, able to get a lot of, you know, personal stuff done, a little bit of school and whatnot. And then reenlisted again and then came here to Hawaii, and I've been in Hawaii since 2015, January.
Wow. So yeah, like a lot of people in the military, you kind of get to move around a little bit, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been around a little.
Yep.
Not too many places, but...
Right. Well, talk a little bit about the training you've had. And I understand you were also in Ranger School. You might want to talk about how that affected you as a soldier.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, anyone who's been to Ranger School, they understand the, I guess you could say, the suck. I mean, it's definitely a very hard school. I mean, you go in the summertime, you're dying. I unfortunately went in the wintertime, so it was probably the coldest I've ever been in my entire life. I mean, living in Chicago where it's like, you know, freezing up there, you know, don't matter what you wear, still never as cold as I was in like the mountains of Dahlonega, Georgia. But it definitely, how I look at what Ranger School did, because I didn't go to Ranger School until I was already a staff sergeant. And I really think it helped hone the skills I already had, the raw, like, military skills, basically, you know, the basics on how to actually be an infantryman. It really honed those skills on how to do things, like, you know, I guess you could say by the book, but like to the T, to where you know how to complete that mission, and to actually, like, no matter what circumstances you have going on, you push past it and you know complete what you got going on. Because I went there at 205 pounds and I came back at 55 pounds, and I went straight through. I got lucky, didn't get recycled or anything. So I mean, definitely a grueling school. Any guy who's been there can talk about it. It's definitely not for the weak or faint-hearted. It's very, I would say, one of the hardest physical schools you can go to, and even just mental. As far as, I'm not going to say like you know, there's not like a lot of book studying, but just the mental capacity to keep staying in there whenever it's like, all right, man, one more day. Like, everyone has the same story, you know, with their Ranger buddy. They go, hey, we'll quit tomorrow, man. All right, no, let's quit the next day. Oh, you want to quit today? How about let's quit tomorrow then, bud? And you just keep working through with your Ranger buddy and other guys that you're with, and just get through whatever is getting thrown at you.
Wow, that's neat. So now, Captain Roman was telling me about what happened on your last deployment to Afghanistan, and then
mm-hmm.
about your helmet and getting it back. And why don't you talk a little bit about what happened?
Okay, so this is towards the end of deployment. We have probably about a month left, and we conduct an operation called Strong Eagle 3, and pretty wild, because lots of guys, I mean, there's a couple movies about it, like The Hornet's Nest, and this new movie out called No Greater Love, and people will talk about the whole operation and stuff like that throughout the whole just deployment, because we'd already been, this has been, a rough deployment. I mean, I'm not taking away from what anybody else has been in. Everyone's had rough deployments, but for me, this was a pretty rough deployment compared to Iraq. Was a little wild, but this was even, it seemed a little more, you know, certain times was pretty wild. And so we got the mission, Strong Eagle 3, the platoon I was in, Bravo Company, we got tasked to basically, we were going to set up a blocking position on top of a mountain and kind of like an HLZ and just, or like a helicopter landing zone, and just kind of hold out there while there was multiple platoons set up around on different mountaintops, they're kind of, while another platoon would be pushing through the middle of the valley for known suspected Al-Qaeda, or not Al-Qaeda, Taliban. So we set up there, we landed at night, and as soon as we landed, it was like already kind of hectic. There's this, like, seemed like thousands of people. It was a huge mission. So we pushed everyone off that, you know, we didn't need around there, like other platoons. Just, there were so many people out there, it was insane. But we set up our little fighting position, kind of, is basically makeshift holes with sandbags, and you fill them with rocks and dirt and stack them as high as you can, and you just hang out there. And that, you know, our, you know, it was vital for us to be there and hold that mountaintop for any squirters or anything like that to keep the enemy funneled in through the valley. And as soon as it, you know, it started getting daylight, that's when, you know, we initially started getting contact and things like that. And it was towards mid-morning, probably. It died down a little bit, and so I got out of my little hole, my little fighting position, to go get something from another fighting position. And the guy, one of my buddies, was in another fighting position. I told him to throw me some CLP, and like to lube up the machine guns and whatnot. So he threw it to me, and as he threw it to me, I went to catch it, and I dropped it. And then as I kneeled down, that's when I immediately, you know, gunshot rang off, and boom, I got shot. And it hit me at like a downward angle, hit my helmet, and pushed my helmet into my face. And it felt like I got punched, like that someone just uppercutted me or something, because I was looking down. And, I got up, and I, you know, said a couple of choice words, and I was like, what's going on? Like, did someone just get out and do something? And then that's when I kind of came to a little, you know, got my wits about me. My buddy was like, that's when more contact kicked off. So I jumped into this hole, another fighting position, and I took off my helmet and looked at it, and then that's when I realized what happened. So I called up my platoon sergeant, I was a squad leader at the time, and I was, you know, just told him what happened. And they ran over there and came and checked on me, and I was like, yeah, I'm good, man. And then I was still there. Like, we couldn't just, you know, can't just get me out of there immediately. So I wasn't sure if I was even going to leave or not, and then they made the decision, my medic did, that, like, basically, you know, right now I was good, but the swelling from it, and they don't know if I have something wrong with my, you know, you can't tell if I'm bleeding inside my head or if my brain's full, who knows. So wait, you know, it's like 8 to 12 hours until I finally get out of there, and they take me, and I go to Fobrite. You know, I get out on my own, and, you know, there's already been a bunch of guys shot and or whatnot, and so it's very, you know, the medic, they get going crazy. Like, so I get out, and I'm walking on my own. I feel good. Like, there's no pain. It just, you know, my face feels fine. Go to start at Fobrite, which was like the closest fob there. Go there, they check me out. They're like, hey, we're going to push you up to more care. So, because I basically, the whole point was I needed to get somewhere to get a CAT scan. And when you're that deep in the valley, like, there's, you know, not CAT scans or anything that deep in the valley, even at those fobs. So right. I had to go all the way up to Bagram Air Force Base. And I get there, and they run a CAT scan and all that. Turns out clear, no TBI, no nothing. And then one of the, it was like an Air Force colonel that was there, that was like on the medical staff, and he's like, tell me I'm going to go to Germany and stuff. And I'm like, hey, wait, man, like, I got like, you know, 2 weeks before I leave. Like, I'm not rolling out, like, leaving my squad or whatever. So he just goes, all right, well, I mean, I don't see no reason you can't go back. So he just sends me back, and I, takes about 4 or 5 days, and I get back, and I'm at my main COP, like, which was COP Fortress, where Bravo Company's at, and then I was there. And, like, a week later, already in the gym, like, and then my platoon got done with that mission and showed up, like, maybe 2 or 3 days after I got back, and I was on patrol probably a week after that already, just continued on.
Wow, that's amazing. It sounds like you were very, very, very fortunate. I'm really lucky. Glad that you're okay. That's good to hear.
Appreciate that.
Absolutely. So how did your prior training help you prepare for this type of situation?
Well, I mean, definitely, you know, for my first appointment, it kind of you know, it got me used to, you know, I guess you can say, being in certain situations as far as being in contact or, you know, when stuff goes bad, anything like that, how to react, how to let that training, that muscle memory kick in. There's not a lot of, I guess you could say, muscle memory for getting shot, but it definitely, you know, there's things, you know, you get taught, like self-aid, buddy aid, then, you know, doc aid. So it definitely, you know, first thing I did once I got hit, it's, you know, started checking, you know, checking on myself. Then my buddies checked on me and then, you know, called in the medic. So, I mean, it definitely, the training prior prepared me on how to react in, you know, situations. I mean, you most of the time you have it planned in your head that no matter what, you don't want to think about it, but any guy that can tell you when goes down range, you're thinking about, you know, what if this happens? What, you know, how am I going to act? What if this happens? You know, if I get blown up and, you know, everyone thinks in their head that, you know, you kind of run through the scenarios on how you should act and, you know, don't freak out, don't make the guys, you know, because you have to think you have these, you know, brand new soldiers, 18, you know, off in war right now, and they're looking to their, you know, leadership, first line, you know, team leader, squad leader, whatever, and they're, you know, they're expecting you to act accordingly when things happen. You don't want to be that guy who, oh man, so are, you know, you probably heard about it or seen it, you know, someone gets hurt and then everyone freaks out, and you know, that's one thing with training. You got to remember, like, mission first. Like, it's not being cold or callous. It's, you must complete that mission no matter what. It could be your best friend, whoever goes down. You have to keep going. Like, it's not over yet. So, I mean, that, you know, that person's going to get that aid. He's going to get taken care of. But you got to think, like, so I tell even my guys now, my platoon, I'm like, you know, we'll be, you know, even just in training, like, you know, doing, you know, squad sticks, you know, situational training exercises, you know, they'll give you casualties to test you, you know what I mean? And if you're, you know, when you're if you're the guy, you know, you're a shooter, you don't need to stop. I mean, you might stop for a second, be like, are you good, man? And then you continue on. And it's, I mean, I like to take it as to let my guys know if any of them, you know, I didn't even know that video got put up on the internet till like earlier this year. And then I just tell my guys, like, hey, man, even though, I was, like, senior squad leader in the platoon at the time, and it's like anybody can get hit, get hurt, whatever. You just got to remember to keep that momentum, keep the fight going, and not freak out at all.
Right. Especially when you still have incoming fire coming in, right?
Yeah. You can't stop. I mean, I tell these guys, I mean, I talk to my soldiers, and it's like, I mean, you know, my generation, we're dudes are going to war, dudes, stuff like that, but I still tell them, like, hey, you know, like, my grandfather was in Vietnam, and I'm like, you think we got it bad? I tell them, think of how bad those guys had it. Like, they didn't have near the technology we got, they didn't have the equipment we got, and they were out there, like, I was like, no matter how crappy it is right now, it can get worse. Like,
right.
You know, you just got to be thankful that you're still breathing right now and that, you know, just keep fighting on.
Absolutely. Now, recently, I understand about a week ago, you received that Kevlar, that helmet
yes.
back. Can you tell us
yes,
what
sir.
Happened? You had some kind of an event.
Yeah, so it's literally been like, you know, 4 years that they've been trying to give me this helmet. But the thing, you know, it gets caught up with, I guess, legal and things like that, to where they don't know if they can give the whole helmet because who knows, like someone might try to wear it again. I have no idea. But, you know, I wouldn't do that. But so basically, you know, they finally got hold of me and they were like, hey, you know, we got your helmet and stuff like that. So what they basically did was they cut it in half. So the actual front portion of the helmet, it's on like a plaque with my name and stuff. And they had a real nice ceremony for me. Like my whole company out, my wife and son, you know, were there and they just kind of, you know, talked about the situation a little bit, and then they just presented it to me, and it was pretty cool. I mean, they kept asking me, like, how does it feel, you know, to get this back? And I mean, it is pretty cool to get it back and all. It's just a wild story when I think about it. And I mean, I guess when my son's older, you know, I'll let him know, you know, hey, you know, he'll probably ask about it, and, you know, I'll probably tell him a couple things, not too much into it, but, I mean, it does kind of, it's like I appreciated it because I feel like it was more, it puts a face to it to really let some of these younger guys know, like, they had me talk in front of them, and I told them, you know, this lets you know, like, stuff's real, like, I get it, if you, you know, out training, and you're like, who cares, it's just training, blah, 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 and, I mean, this lets them know, like, it is real out there. When they go out there and they, you know, they go down range and like stuff's real. This isn't video games. This isn't, you know, nothing's going to happen to me. Like stuff can happen. I mean, I've had plenty of friends who have either died or been hurt while we deployed. And I think some of these younger dudes coming in, it's hard for them to really see it because it's getting, you know, you're getting more and more of the guys who are in leadership positions and whatnot who haven't deployed yet. And it's not their fault. It's not like putting blame or nothing like that. It's just the way, you know, the way it's going. It's, you know, stuff's drawing down a little. So it just kind of helps put a face to what's really out there, like how serious you have to take your training and deployments that some guys just don't. And, you know, I appreciate it because I really think it made it. I keep kind of beating it in, but, I mean, it kind of lets them know how serious stuff is, especially being downrange.
Right. Yep. So how did your family react when they found out what happened to you? And I guess you mentioned your wife. She was at this event a week ago, too.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, like, when this happened, I didn't know my wife yet. So, but... My wife, you know, she's newer to the Army, so she's kind of getting used to stuff, and, you know, she doesn't, you know, she kind of knows a little bit about it, but, I mean, I never really, you know, I don't go around and, like, talk about this stuff, like, oh, you, and then I guess she didn't see that YouTube video till like, a couple months later, someone was talking about it, and she decided to watch it, and she was like, what, you know, what the heck, like, that's crazy,
mm-hmm.
You know, I guess she kind of she's getting... it's kind of hard to put into words. She's starting to now understand, like, what you do in the military, like, what, you know, when you go downrange, at what, you know, the possibilities of what could happen and whatnot.
Absolutely. By the way, I put that YouTube video on your talk show page, so people, every time the people come there to find out about this program, they can click on it and watch. But Captain Roman put a warning with it, warning harsh language. So,
yeah.
But it's on there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not my finest moment. Like at the end, there's something said. I mean, sounds goofy, but I mean, I guess I was just pumped up with adrenaline, and I didn't even know. I mean, you gotta think you're downrange for a year. You've been patrolling. You've been working out 3 hours a day. The testosterone flowing through everyone. Everyone's a ticking time bomb, just, you know, pumped out of their mind, like, let's go, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, definitely probably could have said something better, but it's comedic relief,
sure.
I guess.
Yeah, I can remember on the many trips I made to Iraq and Afghanistan, before each time we turned on the camera, I'd always tell the troops around me, now, if you use one of those words, unfortunately, you know, we're going to have to back up, start all over again. So please try not to. Never really good about it. Then when the camera went off, of course, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, yeah. It's like, go ahead, sir.
No, go ahead.
No, all I was going to say is it's like, it sounds bad to say, but someone's like, it's just, the language is like in the culture. I think it just, I mean, I see it everywhere, though. It doesn't matter if you're stockbroker or what, like people, I mean, he used choice language, I guess.
Right. So I think you've already kind of shared a lot with other soldiers from what you said, other soldiers may be listening, but what more advice would you give to them that would maybe find themselves under fire?
Well, the main thing that you, how I look at it, violence of action. So if you're ever in that situation and, you know, you come under fire or whatnot, you know, you need to apply that violence of action, which is simply overwhelming firepower to take out whatever enemy is coming at you. Because you got to think, this is a man, you know, trying to take your life, and you need to realize that he doesn't care about you. Like, you know, you see what I'm saying? Like,
mm-hmm.
It's, I'm not being cold or anything. It just, you got to think how I look at it, how I thought anytime anything happened when I was downrange is, you know, how bad do I want to go home? How bad do I want to, you know, do I really want to miss those things or not live a life or anything like that? And you got to fight through and just, I mean, it's hard to say the words without, like, I mean, I guess you just got to man up and do your job. Everyone knows, you know, if you sign up and join the infantry and you don't think that, you know, something could happen, like, you got to use that training you get and you just got to take it to the enemy. It sounds cliche, I guess you could say, but that's the main thing that, you know, I let my soldiers know, anybody know, you got to just take it to them. You don't let them take it to you.
Absolutely. What would you like the public to know, people listening, about the Army?
Well, I mean, I think the Army is, you know, everything has, you know, people can complain about whatever they want, you know, and whatever job you got, you know, you can complain, blah, blah, blah. But I think the Army, personally, is a great, great tool and great place for younger men who need structure, need development, need something. Even if you only join for 3 years and get out, you know, you will come out a better person, and maybe with a skill, with some skill sets. And, you know, what it is, I think some people get a misconception of the Army because of one soldier doing something bad, but you don't think of the, you know, 100,000 other soldiers who do the right thing. So I think, I mean, you can't just judge it off of that. You have to really look at what these guys do every day. Like, my wife asks me all the time, she's like, how do you get up at 4:30 in the morning, come home at 7 o'clock at night, and repeat nonstop?
Yep.
And I'm like, I don't know. It's like, how do you, you know, get up, you know, like I was saying, it's early, you go do PT, you're doing hard PT for an hour and a half, 2 hours, all right, and then go to the gym, you know, at lunch, and then go to the gym after work while still, you know, being functional as a person, not just laying there like, oh, man, like, I can't move, I'm sore, or I'm tired. Like, today I got, like, 3 hours of sleep. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I got a 17-month-old baby, and it's like, you know, there's guys with more kids than me who do it. So it's like, you know, it's that, like, definitely, I mean, people got to look at things like that. Like, it's a very hard job, and it's very hard on your family and very hard on your stress. Like, I'm 29 years old and I have gray hairs, and, like, I definitely
look
a little older than 29 just because of, you know, the stress. But, I mean, I enjoy it. Like, I like being with the men. I like the camaraderie, just the whole – it's a thing you never experienced. Maybe if you played, like, college football or, like, college sports or professional sports. But even then, like, that's not life or death there. You know what I mean? Like, this is life or death with these men. And, I mean, you just can't get better than that. You really can't. I mean, any service you're in, you have anything like that going on, I mean, that's why I wonder why people want to stay in the Army or join the Army. I mean, you can't get nothing like this anywhere else but in the military. And, I mean, and military just gets a bad rap sometimes, and it's, you know, it's sad to see, and it's like, I mean, I hate when I see that people are, like, anti-Army and stuff like that, and it's like, I mean, I don't even see what the point of why you would be like that. Like, I mean, it's a selfless service that guys do in the military, and I don't need someone to tell me thank you. I don't, you know, and no one wants that, and we still continuously take up arms and do what we need to do for the military. I mean, there's guys who do 10 times more than me. I'm not even saying, like, how I look at it, whatever I've done, there's always a guy in the Army who's done 10 times more. And
mm-hmm.
No one's looking for anything, but it's like, I mean, I just want sometimes people to look at it, instead of thinking about the negative, think of all the positive. And granted, there are tons of people who support the military, you know, through and throughout, and I appreciate that. But just if anyone has any bad feelings towards the military, maybe they should take a second and just, you know, talk to a couple of military guys, and then you change your whole perspective of what the military, you know, what it is and what it instills in the people and things like that.
Yep. So would you like to share a little bit what your plans are for the future?
Yeah, I'm kind of at a crossroads right now in my career. I mean, I've been in almost 10 years, so, you know, if I re-enlist again, it's, you know, I'm staying in. You know, I'm basically in death. But I was looking towards I was thinking about maybe going to selection for SF. I feel like, you know, I've done a good amount of, you know, what I can do in the regular infantry. Now I was thinking about maybe trying, you know, to get into that world, SOCOM world, or even if that doesn't pan out, I was thinking about going to fly helicopters because, I mean, right now is usually about the time when guys become warrant officers and all that. And that's something I've dreamed of since I was young. Like, I'd be so cool to fly helicopters. I thought, you know what I mean? Like, to have that skill and stuff like that, to be able to do that. And granted, I like Hueys. I don't know why, but we don't fly those. But, I mean, just in general. So, I mean, that's probably my plans. I mean, I really don't. I mean, I like the regular Army, you know, but I kind of want to, you know, get into something different. So either Special Forces or going to fly is probably in my future. I mean, you just got to see how, you know, the cards lay, see what happens after I go do these couple things, if I get picked up or accepted or whatnot.
Right. Well, I appreciate you sharing all this, Sergeant. I mean, I appreciate you being very open about it. So before we go off the air, before we complete this program, mm-hmm. Would you like to give a shout-out to family and friends? And, you know, maybe your 17-month-old son will listen someday, you know?
Yeah. You know, of course, I want to, you know, say thank you to my wife and my son. My wife supports me 100% in, you know, everything I do in the military. And, you know, she understands, you know, we're gone a lot and stuff. And she, you know, handles it with grace. And, you know, to, you know, the guys that I grew up with in the Army, you know, some are still in, some are still out. Certain guys, like a real influence in my life, Sergeant First Class Old Decker, he's at Fort Drum right now. He was, you know, my squad leader when I was in Scouts. My old PL, you know, Captain Shanker, he's out now, but Staff Sergeant Becker, Sergeant Rueda, right now, some of the guys I currently serve with, like First Sergeant Lusk, Captain Munch, Captain Hodgson, Sergeant Long, these are guys who, you know, I look up to, who, you know, still, you know, remind me, you know, what I'm doing and give me purpose, and guys that I can talk to that, you know, put things into perspective with me and that I trust and that I know, you know, got my back to the fullest.
Well, thank you very much again for your service to our country, and appreciate you taking the time today to be on the air with us and share a little bit about your service.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. I mean, you wanted me to come on here. I mean, it says a lot. I appreciate it.
Well, we've been doing this for almost 10 years now, and it's an honor. It's like people ask me, because I'm a little bit more up in years, and people ask me, how long are you going to do this, Bob? And it's like, well, long as God leads me here, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's stories to be told, so we'll just keep doing this as long as we can. It's an honor.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you. You have a good rest of your day.
You too, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Well,
thank
folks, we've been talking with Staff Sergeant Michael J. McKenzie, Purple Heart recipient, 2-time Iraq deployment, Afghanistan deployment. Talked about his 10 years of service, and wow, like I said earlier when we started, we've been doing these call-ins for 3rd Brigade Combat Team, 25th Infantry Division at Schofield Barracks for I think about 7 months now, and we have more programs coming up, about 3 more in November, December a couple, even a couple in January, and so each one of them, just great stories. These are the men and women who are, you know, just some of them out there serving our country. And so if you like what you've heard today, what you're listening to right now, we're on all our programs, whether it's the R4 Alliance programs or 3rd Brigade Combat Team programs, we have them all posted on all of our Facebook pages. On 2 Facebook pages, Talking with Heroes is one, Talking with Heroes program is another, LinkedIn, Talking with Heroes, Twitter, Talk with Heroes, Google Plus, and Pinterest. I'm still learning that one. And so if you see any of those posts out there, first of all, connect with us and then share them. We appreciate that. It's amazing to watch. We just finished about 25 interviews at the R4 Alliance National Conference, and it's amazing. It's just been a little over a week. Over 1,000, actually about 1,200 people now have watched one or more of those videos. So, you know, people do, they thank the people that are serving our country and who have served, and we do too. So we're going to continue doing this. So I appreciate it. And I also want to give a shout out to all of our veterans and families. Thank you for your service to our country. To all of our men and women who are still serving and your families, thank you for your service. And for those of you who may be in an area possibly in harm's way, be safe, stay alert. I will look forward to you coming back home. God bless you all. God bless America.